Happy 2026. We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. We're going to talk more about the Dogs, the mistakes that were made last night that cost them. They had plenty of opportunities, but sometimes you got to tip your cap. Their quarterback was pretty good. We'll get into all of that coming up with Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. But how you finish matters. Falcon fans, no one knows what the future holds for Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot. I don't know if anybody knows, Mike. Maybe Mr. Blank knows, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's sitting there and going, I'll see you on Sunday. The bottom line is winning on Sunday will help, I think, their calls. That would mean we'd end the season on a four-game win streak, Mike. It's the first time that will have happened since 2019. It's been a long time. And even though we're going to be out of the playoffs, we know what our lot in life is. There are a lot of things out here hanging in the balance, Mike, like Matt Ryan coming in to maybe help this organization, or what the Sportsologist group is going to say, or what they're already maybe saying to our ownership group. But this game, your favorite 3.5 points against the Saints, who are your arch rival. And, oh, by the way, Mike, we talked to Bobby Hebert last hour, and he said, look, this quarterback's really good. This Tyler Shook kid is pretty damn good. I think he's the franchise QB.
Right, and you know how I feel about this? I think this team has got so much talent. So we've got more talent than anybody else in this division, and I will die on that hill. I know the Bucs have got Mike Evans and Godwin. They were banged up a bunch of the season. You know, we've got a quarterback that, you know, the quarterback situation is what it is, but we've certainly righted the ship. It's everything I thought that needed to be handled was mishandled at one time or another. Special teams. So if we win, if we beat the Saints by 42 points, it still don't mean anything to me. Because, you know, when you win games that are meaningless, and yes, I know, as you said last week, guys still have to put things on tape, whether they're going to be playing here in Atlanta or somewhere else, and to, potential new teams. But still, when the season was on the line, when the division was up for grabs, you guys blew it. You spit the bit, as they say in horse racing. You couldn't handle the pressure. So from coaching on the way down, we've got tremendous talent on this team. I don't think it was maximized. I move on. I change the regime. Now, the general manager, that's a more difficult question for me. But certainly, I mean, there's three options here. Everybody goes. Coach goes. And the, I guess the assistants would be replaced, right?
Yes.
You know, or everybody goes, GM, the whole shebang, and head coach. And where, by the way, you got any feeling on your gut right now with 1 week left in the season where this goes?
No, and I don't know if anybody does. I mean, that's where I'm at. I'd love to tell you this is what's going to happen by Monday. So we could all just take a deep breath and get ready to move on. One way or the other. I don't think anybody knows. And Monday when we come in here, Mike, we may not know by 2 o'clock. I hope we do. But maybe we don't, and maybe we have to wait as we'll get the breaking news during the show that, hey, the Falcons have decided or they're moving on. Either way, I do think how you finish matters, and we'll see if it really does. Look, if they win this game on Sunday and beat the Saints and end with a four-game win streak and he still gets fired, then it does tell you that it doesn't matter. What Mike's talking about is the reality, which is the stuff that happened before this is the stuff that got you got. 404-726-0929. You guys can chime in on a Friday, guys. Let's hear from Raheem Morris, because we asked him this way back when, the first time we saw the Saints, and I said, we don't like him. We don't like him.
We don't like the Saints. You know, that's clear. That's clear and obvious. And, like, it's the reason the National, you know, Football League, you know, makes all these games at the end, try to make them division games and do that, whatever the nature may be. But that's the exciting part about the National Football League, so you can get these type of games, these type of moments, divisional rivals. Get it all together. It was nice to go out there and get one win versus those guys. It'd be better to get two.
Yeah. And look, the going down to the end of the season with these division games, it is cool. I mean, the Steelers-Ravens playing for something. We should be playing for something. Instead, it's Carolina and Tampa in our division. The NFL got that right. They understand these. At the end of the year, these division games do matter. But I also think, Mike, when you talk about where our team is right now, are we playing our best football?
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Why didn't you have this team ready to play great football out of the gate? Why didn't we have a field goal kicker that could do his job for, like, the first quarter or the first half of the season? You know, why was special teams consistently bad? Even in the game we win against the Rams, special teams gave the Rams the springboard to get back in the game with a blocked field goal that turned into 7 points and then a subsequent touchdown. So I know we've talked about it. How many guys have their eyes on this? Well, Matt Ryan has been rumored to be involved and been reported to. So what level? Is he going to be a GM? Is he going to just poke his head in? Hey, I didn't like this. I didn't like that. If I want Matt in, I want Matt in for everything. You know, I would like Matt to come in and be like the next John Lynch or John Elway. These are guys that came in without experience and had success. if we're going to really go that route. I mean, the consultant thing to me is too vague. Like, you mentioned Troy Aikman's going to be doing that apparently in Miami.
Well, everybody's doing it. Yeah, I mean, everybody's bringing
Tom Brady in Vegas.
Yeah, everybody's bringing in a former great to say, what do you think, whether they're related to the team or not, what do you think about our processes? What do you think about how we're dealing with some of the stuff that's going on internally? That's what's funny to me. I mean, like, Falcon fans, some of you guys are mad. Everybody's doing this. What does Troy Aikman know about the Miami Dolphins?
Right. I mean, again, everybody in Dallas is going, if we can't Troy Aikman fix the Cowboys, you know, Jerry should listen to him. He's been telling Jerry how to fix the Cowboys for 25 years. He don't listen.
Yep. And so.
But I know, I just. There are things about this team which were done well. We've added some really great pieces on defense. We got the most dynamic player in the league right now by everyone's estimate in Bijan Robinson. But you screwed up the quarterback situation. We have no idea what the quarterback situation is moving forward, how it's going to be addressed. But at the end of the day, as a Falcon fan, Carl, I still want to beat the Saints. Don't want to lose this game. But it doesn't matter to me in the big picture about beating the Saints and winning four in a row do enough to keep Raheem Morris as head coach.
Is it upsetting to Raheem that they're playing as well as they are even after being eliminated?
It's really upsetting. You liked us to have won some games so we can be in this race or lead in this race. You know, it was what we feel we could have been. But we're not. So what we've done is we focus on winning. We focus on going out and doing the best job that we can do. To close out, you know, our last game. And that's kind of been the focus for around there for us.
Yeah, it is disappointing. He's not the only one that's upset that they're playing this well. But, you know, once you've been eliminated, this is our lot in life. I'll say this. Even if we were competing for a playoff spot, Mike, I don't know how far we would go. Would I be happy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm tired of losing and I'm tired of not being in the playoffs. I'm tired of getting those phone calls in December. Y'all ain't going nowhere. Yeah, thanks. But the thing that has to improve, this offense has got to become more dynamic. And as good as Bijan is, and as much as we've used him this year and the milestones he's hit, mm-hmm. this offense isn't dynamic enough, Mike, and it's not exciting enough. When you start talking about the interest level, it's B, it's Drake. We don't have a legitimate down-the-field threat, and as good as Pitts has been, give or take a few games, it's just not. And that, to me, fundamentally, you want to get people excited, is about offensive football.
Right, but this kind of brings the conversation back to the front office and Terry Fontenot. You know, you brought in Darnell Mooney, who had a history of inconsistency and injury at Chicago, and he's got a history of inconsistency and injury here in Atlanta. And he's making some decent coin, and he's not that guy. And, you know, his moments have been so few and far between. As we said before last week, anything you get is kind of gravy, right, from Darnell Mooney. And unfortunately, you know, the other guys have just been inconsistent. Casey Washington couldn't stay healthy. Sills is now getting on the field. But you're right. Anybody not named Drake London is a giant nothing.
Yep.
You know? And Pitts, you know, how much of that do you put on the GM? Look, you drafted the guy. Pitts is the greatest freaking mystery to ever wear a Falcon uniform. Can be the most dynamic player on the field, and then he can disappear like he did last week. So they've got questions, and guys were asking us earlier on the text line about Tyler Allgeier. I think that becomes a luxury. I think you hope you find another dynamic back as a backup, because you got to find balance. You can't run Bijan into the ground. You don't want to get, you know, prematurely aged where he's like a Saquon Barkley who burns out, right, or Derrick Henry.
Yeah, you need balance. I do agree with that. I just think the cost is going to be prohibitive.
You can't franchise tag him.
No.
He either takes your deal or he gets more money to go be the man somewhere else or the part of a tandem.
I do think you have to have balance. I'm with you there. But I don't know. I think just from a draft standpoint, it's probably cheaper to go that route. But we'll see, man. These are decisions that need to be made. One last thing from Raheem. Talking about winning now, how does that translate to next season?
You can't ever get tired of winning, and winning is fun, and you got to obsess over it. And I want the guys to obsess over winning no matter what it is, so like, or whatever the stakes are. So like, if you can find a way to do those things, that's how you become a winner, and that's how you change your program into a winning program, and that's exactly what we want to be.
I'm glad he didn't say it translates into next year, because it doesn't. I'm glad he said that. He's right. You do have to be obsessed with winning, but you have a bunch of guys in your locker room who feel that way. If you don't, it can't be just one dude who's obsessed with winning. Basketball, you can do that. If you're Michael Jordan, then you come in and guess what? I rub off on you, and now you're with me. But, Mike, there's too many guys in an NFL locker room that if you don't have enough of those guys, it's not going to work. But I'm glad he didn't say that, because here's the reality too, Atlanta. Regardless of what happens Sunday, it don't mean anything for September. It doesn't mean a damn thing for what happens that first week in September when we get back on the field.
Right.
And I don't know what it looks like, Mike, but because we beat the Saints or we won our last four, it's nice to win, but let's keep building. But it has nothing to do with that.
Right. I mean, it's just why guys ask me all the time. Even today at the gym, guys asking, you know, what do you think Arthur's going to do? He's got this Sportology consulting group that's been monitoring our team. You know, he's got Matt Ryan now as hopefully as an influence. But what does Matt Ryan – is Matt Ryan seeing the same things we're seeing? Does he see a dysfunction, a disconnect with special teams that was never addressed? And how does that – the Rams, as we said, they fired a guy Christmas week because they blew it against Seattle. And we've just let this malignancy that is our special teams just linger the entire season. It cost us a bunch of games. It cost us at least four losses. They got flipped the field on us.
Here's my thing about the consulting thing or whatever the role may be. I mean, guys, Tom Brady's consulting the Raiders. Did he consult them to go get Geno? Mike, do you have a voice or do you have decision-making power? They're two different things. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you can tell me that, hey, a guy has a voice, but does he have decision-making power?
Right, that's why I said, look, if you're going to do it, if I'm in for a penny, I'm in for a pound. You know, with Matt Ryan. But does Matt Ryan look at his, you know, look, I can make a little extra loot as a consultant with the Falcons, or does he want to continue to commit to TV? He's doing a great job at TV. A lot of folks feel did a nice job at his, you know, doing the job in the booth, if that's moving forward in his career. Or does John Lynch, remember, John Lynch did some TV, then he jumped in and he had never been a GM. Now, Matt Millen jumped in and never been a GM. It was a disaster in Detroit. John Elway had never been a GM. He struggled to find the quarterback that wasn't named Peyton Manning, but he did win a Super Bowl as a GM. So I'd be curious to see if Matt is that gung-ho about taking the big leap. Like to see it.
Yeah, we will see. That all those decisions, and maybe those decisions have been made. We don't know. But the decision on what's going to happen moving forward may hinge on what the result is of this game on Sunday.
And the only reason, because I brought this up with Carl a few weeks ago, and guys like, why are you on Matt Ryan's jock? Look, dude, I mean, if you're not a Matt Ryan guy, you're one of those guys, if we never respect him as a quarterback, that's on you. But the guy clearly has a good mind for football, played at the highest level, maybe in the Hall of Fame. He was an MVP. He hear the analysis. He knows what works and what doesn't. And I would rather trust Matt Ryan's instincts in this with us letting another consulting firm roll the dice with another guy who's never been a general manager, who might have come from a successful organization, might have been really good at one aspect of running football teams, but couldn't be a good general manager. That's why I'd roll the dice at this stage. When you don't make the playoffs, Carl, after 8 years, I'm willing to throw some darts.
Yeah, look, and that's part of this. What do you have to lose? I mean, honestly, like, what do you have to lose? I'm not sure if you do. By the way, Matt Ryan will be a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying first ballot, but every quarterback that's thrown for over 50,000 yards is in the Hall of Fame. Matt, 62,000 yards. So he's going to get in. I'm with you, Mike, but I just don't know if he'll be a first ballot. All right, guys, coming up, we're going to talk to Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. What happened last night? Where did the Dogs go wrong? Decision-making by the coaching staff, some shady play calling, the timely play calling, or untimely, should I say. And remember, the best place to catch college football action is at Twin Peaks. That's this Thursday. Andy and Randy are getting ready for the semifinals with a special broadcast from Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. Come on out. Enjoy all the eats, drinks, and scenic views. 11 to 2 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, let's talk about what happened last night with our buddy from Dog Nation and AJC.com. He is Mike Griffith. And, Mike, happy new year to you. Mike and I have been discussing the blunders, in our opinion, last night. So I want to kind of go through some of this with you and obviously get your feel for it. I thought going forward on 4th and 2 at your own 33-yard line, mistake. Well, Kirby says afterwards that the ball should not have been snapped in that situation. Tell me what your thought is about this play and how it played out, because Gunnar Stockton fumbles. It was doomed from the start.
Yeah, well, the key was you saw Monroe Freeling, the left tackle, didn't look like he was going to block. So you had an this is where the Drew Bobo injury caught up with you, right?
Right.
Didn't catch up with you against Alabama. You know, you got through the Texas game, got through Georgia Tech, but, you know, you got an inexperienced guy there, you know, that has a moment, and, you know, it costs you. And, look, this is the takeaway. And it's taken me some time, and obviously I write about this and do this for a living, so I kind of obsess over these things. The better team won. And that's you're like, wait a minute, what do you mean? They beat Ole Miss during the regular season. Ole Miss has got a guy coaching his second game. This is Kirby Smart. This is Kirby who's won 53 in a row when leading at halftime, and he's won 75 in a row when he leads in there in the fourth quarter, and they got that G on that. Look. Hey, let's slow down. Let's check ourselves here. The team that had a first-year starting quarterback, the team that had four new starters on the offensive line, This is a team that lost five guys out of their front seven, including two first-round draft picks. This is a team that lost an All-American safety. This is a team that was playing without their most elite pass rusher, Gabe Harris. It's a team that was playing out with best offensive lineman, Drew Bobo. It's a team that had a safety, starting safety, ejected at probably the weakest position to begin with. And all they did all year was pull stuff out of their butt.
Right.
This was not 2021 and 2022, guys. This is a team that found a way. This was a team that put it all together, exercised the demons against Alabama, and we were drinking the Kool-Aid, but Kirby Smart knew, and he said it in – I should have listened. I remember how I told you he always speaks between the lines?
Right.
He said in a press conference, you know, that – you know, there's the way he looks at it. He doesn't look at where you feel. He looks at, did you get everything out of the team? He said he learned that from Bobby Bowden. He learned it from his dad. Georgia got everything out of this team. This is who they were. They gave you their best. Ole Miss was better. Look, Trinidad Chambliss. Love me some Gunnar Stockton. How can you not? He's been Mr. Clutch all year, right? Trinidad Chambliss is a dude. Did you see how he put the ball downfield? And oh, by the way, they got three or four guys that can run by you. Georgia ain't got nobody in the receiving corps that can run by you. Ole Miss has the 1,000-yard rusher. Lacy Frazier's not as good as him. He's not as good. Ole Miss was better at quarterback. Ole Miss was better at running back. Ole Miss is deeper at wide receiver. In this particular game, they won the line of scrimmage. So should we really be surprised at the – because here's what happened. Ole Miss went out last year and use their NIL money and signed a bunch of free agents, okay? So they got guys that, you know, boom, we're going to help you now. You're going to, okay, well, what's going to happen when the music stops this year?
Right.
What do they got coming back? How many of those guys are headed to LSU? They got to reload. We Ole Miss could be 6-6 next year. We have no idea. What's Chambliss going to do? You know, can they get the same kind of talent out of the portal? But Georgia played the long game. They invested in a lot of freshmen who weren't quite ready. Talon Taylor, you know, Wiley, these guys didn't do anything for you this year. They didn't do nothing. And they're talented, you know, but you had to spend some money on those kids. So you chose to spend money on a few kids at receiver, none of them that really helped you that much. Elias Williams looked pretty in a couple games, but he didn't really do anything. Barbour got hurt. You spent money on a lot of young kids instead of going in the portal and getting a couple of elite receivers. And guess what? It cost you. Now, long term, Georgia's going to be back in the playoffs next year, and the year after, and the year after, and the year after. You know, what they had to do this year, there wasn't much of a margin for error, and they had to win while they were growing. And that's what they did, and they played astoundingly well. But sooner or later, it catches up to you. And Ole Miss played inspired football, and Trinidad Chambliss right now, I think, is playing better quarterback than anybody, including Mendoza. Alabama didn't offer much resistance. We'll find out more about Mendoza when he goes up against Oregon for a second time and Dan Lanning in Atlanta next week. It's going to be a hell of a game. But you ran up against an inspired team that was better than you at the skill positions. And, you know, you made it, like you said, there was some costly mistakes that are un-Kirby-like, right? The kid snapping the ball when he's not supposed to, case in point. Or the management, you know, once you got the first and goal at the 8. You know, you Gunner runs it down to the 3. You got a second and goal at the 3. You're trying to run clock. Ole Miss is calling timeouts. Worst case scenario, you're thinking they're going to go to overtime, but Kirby says, no, we're playing to win. And but here's the only mistake I'd say about that. I don't even mind Kirby throwing it on third down when I gave it more thought, if he truly believed that. Because if we're all going to be honest here, Ole Miss was going to win that game in overtime. Trinidad Chambliss was playing better. They had more options.
That's why they ran the fake punt. That's why they ran the fake punt. They were losing momentum in a big way.
That's right, and that was a hell of a call. But the only screw up here was you're going to win and lose with your best player. Some way or another, you got to have a play for Branch there. That's your dude. That's your guy. That's your ride or die. Yeah. He got you there. Hey. I don't care if there's three guys on him. Find a way. You got to give that guy the opportunity. That's really the only thing I can say. Other than that, Georgia played their cards, man. And then here's the underlying reality for the Georgia fans. The 100 of them I talked to at the airport today. You know, it couldn't get. You don't think it could have got worse? Hey, man, let me tell you something. Carson Beck in Miami, they might have beat your ass in Arizona. Miami's playing pretty good football, guys. That'd have been a sad ending. you lose to Ole Miss in a last second fashion, and she's, it's an SEC. Look, you played your best. It wasn't quite. You go out there, and Miami puts one on you, because if Ole Miss is beating you at the line of scrimmage, Miami's going to dominate you. And if you don't believe me, go back and look what Miami did to Florida, and look at how Georgia struggled with Florida.
It is Mike Griffith, guys from Dog Nation, the AJC, here on the WaitForIt.com hotline, doing the postmortem on Georgia for 2025. We knew the defense was going to take their lumps. No pass rush. That was a big part of it. Couldn't get Chambliss on the ground. He was a rock star. But I just want to ask you one thing. We talked about this earlier, Mike. I want to get your take. I understand last year Gunnar Stockton, his first start against Notre Dame, they put him in a tough spot, and he turned it over. Was the fear of that why you sat on it? A minute 43? Go down the field. You're Georgia. I thought going into a shell up 9 is part of the reason why they lost this game. I think you got to keep the pedal to the metal. I thought that was weak sauce.
Yeah, you know, I think that the Georgia offense is predicated on what the defense does. And we can and will say what we want about Pete Golding. I mean, this guy's got lightning rod written all over him. You know, if you haven't heard one of his press conference's, you know, have the 3-second pause ready, because his initials, PG, are very apt. You know, you may be offended by the language. This guy shoots from the hip. He, you know, he rock and roll. If as long as he's winning, it's going to be fun. If he starts losing, they're going to fire him. But the dude has his team playing right now, and he is a former defensive coordinator, and he doesn't have Lane Kiffin over there trying to run up stats and, you know, get the next date on his cell phone. He's focused in on defense, and he made some nice adjustments, and they did a really nice self-scout. You know, they played Georgia earlier this year. They knew what they needed to do, and they did, and all you got to do is look at Gunner's numbers. They prevented Gunnar Stockton from doing Gunnar Stockton things. They contained him. They said, you know what? If we can just keep this little number one under wraps, he's going to get his catches, and he did. He had 8 of them for 67 yards and a couple fantastic third down conversions and a fourth down. But if we can keep number one under wraps and we can stop Gunner from beating us with his legs, we don't think the guy anybody else is going to beat us. And they didn't. Good coaching by Pete Golden.
Was this the first time in a long time where we saw Kirby maybe try to overcoach in a game?
Well, I don't know about overcoaching. Like I said, I think Kirby, this is going to sound crazy. I think Georgia did a hell of a job to be ahead 21-12. Part of that was Ole Miss self-destruction, poor clock management at the end of the first half. Part of it was a scoop and score. You know, that's the first fumble of Lacy's career. That's an outlier, you know?
Right.
So part of it was a couple of outlier plays. Like Golding said, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the scheme. Just had to execute. And, you know, like I said, Kirby ran the fake punt. Kirby's defense made a play, got him a touchdown. No, I don't think he overcoached. I would just say that the thing that Georgia fans have to come to grips with is that their best isn't good enough. Some years it's going to be like that. Again,
with the parity and everything else.
When Kirby had the previous system in place and there was none of this NIL and guys transferring from one year to the next, he built the best college football program in the game. He won back-to-back titles in the college football playoff era. No one had ever done that. He had 15 guys drafted. No one had ever done that. Now the model's changed. And Kirby's trying to build something, you know, on concrete, not sand. Georgia doesn't want to be in the position where they're signing free agents every year.
Right.
I mean, take a look at the four teams that are left. You know, Indiana, look at how transfer heavy they are. I mean, what, 12 guys from James Madison? Where's Indiana football? Let's be honest here. If Indiana football was a stock, are you buying it? You think they're going to be good in 5 years? Hell no. You know, Oregon's got Nike money. Okay, Texas Tech's got the $25 billion oil guy, gave them a lot of money, played in a bad conference. And Miami has got free agent money and is starting to look like the Miami they were at the start of the year. But where's Ohio State right now? Hey, how'd you like to be Alabama? Do you think Kalen DeBoer might want to call Michigan back and say, is it too late, guys?
Yeah. Right. It's interesting. I think the cost of doing business, to your point, and I was looking at this because I wanted to see what Tech spent, because I had some friends in Texas tell me they spent more than anybody this last year, and it was them and Ohio State. Mm. And combined, they spent upwards of $60 million. Yeah. That's the going rate to get into these games? Is that what you're telling me, Mike Griffith? Is like, hey, you got to spend that kind of money. You got to spend 30-plus to get into these kind of games, not even guaranteeing you a chance to maybe play for the championship.
Look, Kirby's building a Lexus. Those guys are Range Rovers, okay? He's trying to build something that's going to last. He's trying to build something that's going to be low maintenance. He doesn't want the transfer portal window swinging open with 15 to 20 guys a year. He wants to maintain a team chemistry. He wants to grow guys in his program, and he wants to fill holes with free agents. But that's not what these other programs are doing. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the stat, but like 90% of Georgia starters were guys that were recruited by Georgia.
Yes.
Ole Miss, 33% of their starters were recruited by Ole Miss. And that worked out for him this year. Trinidad Chambliss is a tremendous story. You know, the best is basically what happened is the best season in Ole Miss modern era history trumped the Gunnar Stockton story. And it came down to the last minute. Could have gone either way. You know, don't want to pick on the kickers, but one team's kicker was better than the other one. And you know what? That made a difference. So, or Ole Miss had the Lacy fumble outlier. Georgia had the, you know, incorrect snap. It was that close of a game. But, you know, my takeaway, again, is going back and looking at it and realizing that in Georgia's 7 wins this year in the SEC, they had to come from behind in 6 of them.
Right. Shouldn't have won the Tennessee game. Fourth and 15, you know, we talk about that all the time.
I think it was a 4th and 6 at the 28, yeah. But they also had a 4th down in the first quarter.
Right.
You know, so they've had to convert 4th downs. They've had to pull games out all year long. And what happened was our perception changed. And especially the way they dominated Alabama. We said, oh, wow. Now, boy, they've really hit it now. The way they dominated Texas. Oh, my gosh. They're on fire. And they were. You know, but Georgia Tech showed us a little something.
So are you, Mike, just to wrap it up, because I know a lot of Georgia fans are hitting us up on the text line going, you know, look, Kirby's getting paid millions and millions of dollars to win, and now it's 3 years now without a national championship, and fans are greedy. Fair or unfair, the bar has been raised. I mean, I thought, you know, Ryan Day did a worse job than Kirby, but both these guys, even in reloading years, they're supposed to be there in the championship game. So, I mean, what happens if he doesn't build that Lexus by next year?
Well, hold on. So here's the fallacy. Here's what you just caught yourself saying. And all the SEC coaches, I've been on every SEC teleconference. There was a time when we thought that. But we're in an era now where 9-3 might be a good year because of parity. Because there's a free agent, you know, free agent portal every year with unrestricted free agency. And the objective is to get the most out of your team. And you know what? Some years it's going to come together. And some years you're going to be missing your starting center, your premier edge rusher, and your best safety is going to get tossed out of the game, and a backup is going to make a mistake against a red hot team. And that's what happened. I mean, we are now in playoff football, and we have to reprogram our brains, or we're going to drive ourselves crazy into thinking that if the team doesn't win the national title, that the coach isn't doing a good job. Kirby Smart is the best coach in college football, hands down.
He is.
Last night's game does not change that.
No.
He is a program builder, and he is building Georgia to be an annual contender. Some of these other, they're going to come and go because they're going to be going to the portal every year. Every year they're going to have to bring in 10 or 12 guys, and sometimes the chemistry is going to be there, and sometimes 10 of them are going to work out. Some years 4 of them are going to work out. But Georgia is still building a strong foundation where I'd bet you – well, I'd bet a pretty good amount they're going to be in the playoff next year and the year after without even knowing who the starters are. I mean, Elijah Griffin forced that fumble. Now, he wasn't a dominator and a first-team All-American, but he's the guy that forced it. You think he's going to get better? I do. You know, some of these guys, they're going to keep getting better and growing. This was a major reload. Again, they lost 4 starters to the NFL off the offensive line. They lost 5 of their front 7. To the NFL. They lost 16 guys in total to the NFL. They lost an All-American safety. They lost what would have been a third-year starting quarterback. And they still finished as the SEC champions in back-to-back years. And oh, by the way, only 4 coaches have done that. Philip Fulmer, Steve Spurrier, Kirby Smart, and Nick Saban.
It's pretty unique company. Mike Griffith, great perspective. We got a lot to talk about with the offseason. Portal is open, man, so we'll be talking to you next week about what that looks like and who's coming, who's going. Appreciate you. Happy New Year, man, and thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys. Have a happy New Year.
You too. That's Mike Griffith.
Right, man, taking the big picture, and, you know, fans want it now. You know, I mean, you get in the playoffs, you're expected to roll. I didn't get a chance to ask Mike if the layoff hurt Kirby. They tried to simulate as best they could. Kirby was getting after that arse, as we know, that audio that made it out of the stadium and the practice facility at Bud Smear. But still, Carl, Georgia, unfortunately, the season ends in New Orleans.
The higher seed teams with two extra weeks off are now 1-7 in those games since the expansion of the 12-team playoff. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win because you get the extra time off. We're coming back. It's Dukes and Bell. Look, it's the Dogs falling last night to Ole Miss. Thanks to Mike Griffith for stopping by. I was just telling the fellas that many of you are like, get that dude out of here, because you don't like what Mike Griffith is saying in regards to better team one. And this is why I said when we started the show today that I feel like Kirby did more with less this year. Like, this may still be his best coaching job based on what this team was and then what it was projected to be and where they ultimately got. Are they supposed to be here? I think some Georgia fans and many of us, just because we're so close to the program, we go, yeah, they're supposed to be here. Maybe with Kirby and his staff, like, we weren't supposed to be there. We weren't that good. We overcoached, and you know what? We were able to get them to this point based on, Mike, our ability to get these guys to buy in. Now, moving forward, you got a lot of experience coming back, and that part I agree with Mike Griffith. Dogs are going to be right back in this spot next year. I believe that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, only four guys have transferred out, and many of those were already anticipated. I think one four-star DB, but for the most part, you know, Kirby's keeping a lot more guys in place. I mean, you know, Ole Miss, we talked about, it's an amazing story. It's, if they can find a way with all the distractions and not even having their coaching staff here in the building, you know, 6 days before they got to play the Miami Hurricanes, you know, it's sort of became the team I'm pulling for. Ohio State, their expectation, there was no rebuilding at Ohio State. They put guys in the league. Do you think you're telling me that when I'm telling you in the beginning of the season, hey, Carl, you're going to lose a bunch of games and play in the Citrus Bowl at Texas? So,
no.
I mean, two things can be true. All the things that you said are accurate, but if Kirby is the current version of Nick Saban, you find a way to handle your 9-point lead and not blow that game. You, to me, and I said it to you guys to start the show, I didn't like the conservative nature of sitting on it and Bobo's play calling there before the half. It was almost like, hey, man, I'll just take it to the half. It's not the way you do it. And then we can debate and how that happens, how the level of communication breaks down that a guy snaps the ball on a fourth down. By the way, it looked weird anyway. You're faking a punt. What are you doing? You're going to try twice to try to coax Ole Miss to jump off sides? So some of the things that I know that Mike is right about a lot of that stuff, but to me, once you're in that tournament and you've earned that bye, you're supposed to win that game. When you're winning by 9 points, and they should have been up by at least 12, I'll say that, but by halftime.
The part that Mike talked about in regards to we got to recalibrate, it's hard for old school college football fans. Remember, it used to be win everything or you weren't anything. And now that's not the case. There's only going to be one national champion, but guess what? If your team does go 9-3 or it's hit in two or whatever the record may be, and how we used to look at that. Well, they lost. They're not that good. It's just different, guys. This is the different age of college football, and we're not – I'm telling you right now, we're not going to have the same teams every year. We're not. So for Georgia to be in the mix, Mike, to get into the 12, that's the expectation.
Right.
You got to be one of the 12. To say they're going to be national champions every other year or every 2 years, it's unrealistic. So that's the recalibration, is we're not going to have the same teams.
Right.
We're just not. And for every Indiana, and whether this is a fluke and they have a great, you know, run to the championship and they make a movie about it, there will be another team that you go, where the hell did they come from? Because of the way the system is. And it may not be Indiana, but it's going to be another team, Mike. And this is where we're going to be living.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, can a Boston College put this together? Well, if your fan base, do you have guys who are going to be cutting those checks? We said it with Georgia Tech. I mean, Georgia Tech at one point was locked for the playoffs and the season unraveled, because they didn't get enough defensive pieces to make the difference. But, I mean, is Georgia Tech going to have to wait for that Haynes King to come up every 4 or 5 years? That's the same argument I got with Paul Johnson. You know, it's going to take a recruiting cycle to get you for that chance to make the run to the Orange Bowl. Hope that Georgia Tech can take advantage of all the things you just talked about. You know, because why are we here? You know, Kennesaw State's moving up the ladder right now. Georgia State's, you know, they've put money into the program. But you get the feeling we're kind of hurtling towards a 50-team super conference at the end of the day. That's all we got. There's no guardrails. There's nothing from the government. There's nothing from the NC2A about this. So it's the good and the bad. You're right. And Indiana can be there. If they can be there, other teams will get that shot.
All right, couple of news notes, and then we're going to give you our final thoughts on the Falcons who take on the Saints. You'll be able to listen right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Falcons-Saints, last regular season game for the Falcons this year. And again, they could win with a four-game or end the season with a four-game win streak. Real quick, former Cincinnati quarterback Brendan Sorsby is the top player in the NCAA transfer portal. Mike, he's going to visit Texas Tech and LSU.
I thought, now, is the Michigan quarterback going to stay?
It sounds like he's staying. Underwood is his kid's name. Sounds like he's staying. But the Sorsby guy, if you're not familiar with him, it was at Cincinnati. He's in the portal. He's the number one ranked player by ESPN. Both of those programs obviously are looking for quarterbacks. We know Tech paid a lot last year, and obviously Lane Kiffin is looking to get a quarterback.
Right, and that's the thing. The reason why old guy just hit me up in the text line, why is the Ole Miss staff up? Well, guess they're getting paid by LSU. This is this crazy crossover, and Lane Kiffin is expected to be in the same spot that Ole Miss is next year for LSU.
Yes.
And with the portal, that's why all those position coaches, including Charlie Weiss as the coordinator, are supposed to be in Baton Rouge, which is the craziest darn thing. Yeah, Bryce Underwood. I couldn't remember the first name for Michigan. Texas Tech, you and I were texting back and forth yesterday. They have a nose tackle who looks like a better version of Vince Wilfork.
He's good.
That is just, I mean, their defensive players were unbelievable. I said on Twitter, if I was a defensive player for the Red Raiders, I'd walk over and start smacking guys around in the offensive side because, boy, did they shoot themselves in the foot.
I think they had the best linebacker in Rodriguez in the country. And then I think, you know, is it Hunter, the kid that we're talking about, the nose tackle? A beast. Like, they had a really good defense, Mike, at Tech, and some of these guys we're going to see in the NFL draft. Ironically, while we're talking about the transfer portal, before we give you our final thoughts on the Falcons, Austin Simmons was the Ole Miss quarterback before Trinidad Chambliss.
Right.
He is transferring. He is going to be in the portal.
And Chambliss can't get that extra year of eligibility. He applied, like NCAA said no.
Does it not sound like it? So Simmons is going to be looking for a new home, but we'll get you caught up, man. The portal opened today. So over the next few days, and as we get into next week, we'll be hearing more about where some of these players are going to fall. All right, what happens Sunday, Mike, with the Falcons, man?
Man, if you play like they did against the Rams, or they did in Thursday night's game against the Bucs, you know, the way they shut down McBride, right? How about that effort, you know, against Arizona? Then they should shake up, pardon the sort of pun, Tyler Shook. You know, I mean, I think they can get after him. I think certainly we could see Jalen Walker and Pierce do their thing. You know, I hate that Brandon Dorlus has that knee injury. That's a real drag. But we got enough playmakers, man. This should be the way, if we're rolling, and if this is the game that wins it for Raheem Morris to stay here as head coach, with maybe some big changes on the coaching staff, so be it. I mean, once they make the decision, you know how I feel, Carl. It's a body of work. Getting hot late when it doesn't matter doesn't do it for me. I still think they beat the Saints. I think we're better than the Saints by a long shot.
I do, too. That's the way I feel. Look, and I think our defense—
But the Saints feel the same way. They won four in a row.
They absolutely do. And look, Shook's going to throw the ball around. Guys, he's already thrown it 40-some-odd times. They're not afraid to let him throw it around and try to let him win the game. But I do think our defense, our opportunistic safeties, could easily come up with a couple of picks on Sunday, and that could be the difference. I do like us to win this game. I don't know if it means anything. I like to think it does as far as how you finish. Mm. But Monday's going to be a big day, man. 2 o'clock, we are back. And we're talking about Black Monday.
Is it Black Monday for the coach, or we
don't know?
I think either way, there'll be some Falcon fans who will not be happy.
I agree. We'll be talking about the win or loss and getting you caught up on the latest with the NFL, because we will know the seedings and who is meeting who and when the playoffs get ready to start the following weekend. All right, man, we got to get out of the way. Eric Slaughter's got a bridge show, and then you're going to listen to the Hawks take on the Knicks right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Big O, let's get out of here and clear our throat. Hey, thanks to all of our guests, Mike Griffith, Steve Koonin, Puffy K stopped by, Hawks CEO. We also got a chance to talk to B-Mac, Bryant McFadden today. All these guests, by the way, online at Odyssey.com. Make sure you subscribe to Dukes and Bill. Get all of our content. Monday, we'll do our pre-show around 11, 11:15-ish or so. Make sure you tune in. There will be a lot of interesting things going down on Monday. Hey, have a great weekend. Big O, great job as always. Day-to-day executive producing, Mike Bell. Clear your throat.
Hey, man, we love having Michael Irvin on the show because he's always always entertaining. The playmaker always has something to say. And by the way, he'll be 60 in March. Guy's got a six-pack. He's got like a 12-pack, man. The guy's got abs. But taking your belt off and simulating a sex act and then whipping a water cooler with it and screaming apparently at no one had people saying, you know, the game was in Dallas. Did Michael make a stop at the old White House from infamous cowboy days in the mid-90s? I thought he was clean and sober. Well, I know a lot of folks are saying, I'll have what Michael's having.
He had more pressure on him than anybody in the history of college football. Again, not how you start, it's how you finish. Arch finished pretty good. I'm just preparing you for this Heisman campaign that has already started. Arch Manning will be even more hyped next season because of the way that the Texas Longhorns finished. He threw for 221, two touchdowns, ran for 155, and two more. Get your mind right. You're going to be hearing Arch Manning for the Heisman a lot come the fall. Hey, if you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
all your playmakers jump in the portal.